This is a special recording session. I'm here at South by Southwest EDU. I'm with one of the amazing keynote speakers here. Spencer Russell is the founder and CEO of Toddlers Can Read. We'll be talking about the work that he's doing, getting through to parents, getting through to kids, getting through to educators to understand that every toddler can read. His work is incredible. I'm really pleased, amazed to have him here with me. Spencer, welcome to Trending in Education.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Yeah, I mean, you held it down here for folks who don't know the experience of South by Southwest EDU. It's amazing. One of the really remarkable moments is being able to be in a keynote where somebody is presenting you with ideas that are blowing your mind. It's amazing in the audience, but you were actually on the stage. Can you tell me what that was like? How did that feel?
It felt great to be done on stage. It was a lot at once, you know. That was my first, like, speech period.
Yeah.
Let alone keynote, okay. Let alone big stage. And so I've been preparing for the last month or so, really, really locked in for the last week.
Yeah.
And trying to make sure that my energy, my message, my stories kind of all pointed towards action.
Yeah.
And trying to help people take the first step to get started.
Mm-hmm.
And so to be in the room and kind of feel the energy and feel the passion and to feel like that message is landing and that people are going to take action.
Yeah.
And I think for me, even more than like the feeling being on the stage, walking around the convention after, meeting with so many people, having so many people say, I've got a 5-year-old, a 3-year-old, and get started.
Yeah.
Educators say, you know, I feel really convicted to bring some of this into my classroom, stop thinking about this thing and do this thing.
Yeah.
And ultimately that's why I came. It's to get the message, stop fighting about it, let's stop talking about it, and let's start getting some stuff done.
Yeah. You definitely feel it here, and you felt it in your keynote in the room there. And it reminds me of, you know, folks talk about Steve Jobs' reality distortion field, where he could make people do more than they could do on their own. I certainly have felt that from you. And it's actually very much baked into some of your methodology. We'll include a link to a really amazing YouTube video I just watched of you with some stuffed animals,
mm-hmm.
direct address the camera to kind of break down some of what you've learned and some of what's built into your model. Just to take a step back, we always like to start by hearing our guest's origin story.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to this point in your life? Can you catch our listeners up on who you are and how you got to this point in your career?
Of course. And I appreciate the kind words about the video. How much detail do you want? High, medium, low?
Yeah, medium.
Medium detail. I was a teacher for 6 years. I taught kindergarten and first grade. But when my wife and I had our son, I knew I couldn't give the same focus and attention that I wanted to give to teaching and to my son. So I left the classroom and I took a job that made more money, was a little bit flexible, would let her stay home with our son.
Mm-hmm.
And let me be there more for him too.
Yeah.
And so for the next 3 years, I worked at an educational nonprofit.
Okay.
We did curriculum specific professional learning for teachers, which is a mouthful, but we helped teachers understand their new high quality tier one curriculum.
Okay.
So as states are shifting, implementing the different standards, texts are getting more complex. We come in and we do these day-long PD sessions over the course of a year to help teachers understand. That job's great, but it's not my passion. It was never my passion. It was something I was doing because I wanted to be home with my son.
Sure.
And so mid-pandemic, 2020, 2021, I knew that I needed to leave. I wasn't going to continue to do that job because it paid well. It was flexible. I wanted to do something I actually loved.
Yeah.
Because I, like many people, realized life is super, super short.
Yeah.
And so after a lot of meditating and thinking, reading, I decided that I would help parents teach their toddlers how to read.
Yeah.
Because I had already taught my toddler how to read at this point. I knew there was a market for it,
mm-hmm.
because there's huge markets on social media for toddler things.
Yeah.
Just no one was tapping academics.
Yeah.
So I joined Instagram in May of 2021, began to build out courses and resources and just begin to market.
Yeah.
And there came a point late that year where I was kind of waiting for the income from Toddler Can Read to match a full-time job to be able to kind of make the faith.
Yeah.
and into it full time. And I realized it just wasn't going to happen unless I jumped.
Yeah.
And so I quit my job in November to do Toddlers Can Read full time. And I've just been growing and expanding and building resources since.
Yeah. Toddlersread.com. We'll include that in the show notes. And for parents out there, I think folks probably know if they listen to this podcast, I am the parent of a five-year-old who was also with me at South by Southwest. He wasn't actually at your keynote because he was in the expo hall living his best life. Basically, his whole year centers around going to the expo hall, talking to vendors, playing with robots,
and wonderful.
Being the life of the party. But we were very fortunate in that he was able to learn how to read before kindergarten. And it was partly because I think we had a lot of privilege. I happened to have made a similar leap to yours, and I was home really from December of 2019. I left a secure gig at Kaplan to kind of take my leap to launch my consultancy and do what I'm doing here. So I definitely respect the work and I respect the risks you've taken to kind of really go all in here. But then it also gave me this amazing opportunity to kind of be there with my son from age one to now he's five. And, you know, I think that's part of what allowed him and my wife and I to kind of organically get him to where. And also, I think we were fortunate in that he's a special kid who I think probably could have picked some of this stuff up on his own.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I love about what you're talking about is it's genuinely all toddler can read. And the methodology is very direct and straightforward and intimate. That was the part that I think was profound about what you're doing, is both kind of busting myths and misconceptions about toddlers, but then also breaking down in very practical, concrete, and specific terms, this is what you need to do. Can you talk us through a little bit of that? Your methodology, I think, you know, that video I talked about, it's 9 minutes, and I feel like the amount of information transfer that happens there is pretty intense. Can you talk about your method and like how you go about communicating it?
Of course. And I'll probably separate that into into two things, right? There's the method and there's the communication of it.
Yeah.
And my method, whether it's for behavior, which is the video that you referenced, how to help kids focus, follow directions, or whether it's for reading, there is the instructional part of it, the steps, here's the 1, 2, 3, here's the process, and then there's the motivational part, which the you can actually do this, and your kid can do it.
Yeah.
And when I make videos, I try to think through not only what are the steps, but what are the steps and how can I make someone think they can do this and that their kids can do it too.
Yeah.
And so I try to hold those things in kind of equal portions.
Mm-hmm.
When I communicate those ideas, the goal is to keep it super, super simple.
Yep.
I'm not trying to remove all nuance and all of the complexity, but understanding human psychology, if someone's at home watching a video, how to help kids follow directions, there's only so much they can do.
Yeah.
And if I hit them with 25 complicated points, well, all 25 things may be true.
Mm-hmm.
The parent's not going to finish the video to see the 25 things.
Right.
If they do finish the video, they're not going to feel motivated to do those things.
Yeah.
So I want to be able to give people quick wins, things they can turn around and say, I'm going to do this one step. I'm going to sit closer during the lesson.
Yeah.
I'm going to try eye contact.
Yeah.
I'm going to try just touching their shoulder at the beginning to let them know that I'm here with them.
Yeah.
I want people to leave feeling like they can do it, doing it, and then coming back to learn more.
Right.
Because that's really how psychology works. It's never let me give you every single thing at once. It's let me give you a piece, try it out.
Right.
If you like it, come back.
Right.
Come back and learn more. So I really try to balance all of that, the step-by-step information and the motivational part. You can do it. And the quick wind, human psychology.
Yeah.
And just this clear communication that says, yeah, this might take 10 minutes to explain, but we'll figure out how to show this in 30 seconds.
Yeah. I was struck by, you know, using the stuffed animal. You know, you're modeling how I should engage with my child, or I should engage with a child who I'm trying to teach how to read. And the intimacy that you had with the stuffies, also saying you had two there and you kind of had one, like, do something else, see if it could be a one-on-one, very like personal, direct relationship communication. And then I felt that same level of engagement when you directly address the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting how you're weaving together. I guess that one was probably a little more motivational, but like the motivational element for the kid. But then at the same time, realizing your audience is parent and they need to get the same motivation and
exactly.
self-belief and confidence. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, that video, I think, very meta. Because if you watch the steps that I'm outlining to you to the kid, I'm using them all with the camera.
Right.
And so this concept of energy is sometimes a really hard one to explain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of a central tenet of that video.
Yes.
And that video now has, I think, like 1.4 million views. It's really resonated. And you look at the comments and it's, I've never seen this explained like this.
Yeah.
I've never seen this explained like that. Half of what people are picking up on isn't the words, it's the energy of that video.
Yeah.
And you can see it. And so when I told my cameraman, hit record, I've got one ready, I was in the emotional, energetic space that I want parents in when they're with their kid.
Yeah.
So you hear the voice is a little bit down lower.
Yeah.
You see the eye contact, it's a little bit more persistent.
Yeah.
The tempo of words is a little bit slower. And people might not consciously be picking up on these things, but there's just the energy there that kind of keeps you there. It keeps you watching. And that's what I want parents to be able to do with their kids. So in that specific video, I think there's a really interesting mirroring of here's what you should do with your kid to help them follow directions and to focus. And also, I'm doing every one of these things with you as you watch the video to help you focus.
Right. And that was the part, you know, the calm, confidence. You mentioned meditation. You too, like, are there elements of like your life and your lifestyle that you think allow you to get to this level of insight and awareness? Because it does feel like you're kind of speaking to the whole parent, I guess, is the way I would think about it, where like there are tips that are a little more, they're very like almost like behavioral, like the actual physical techniques. Also, for our listeners, this is a special episode where, you know, Spencer and I are very close proximity right now, and the level of almost like shared consciousness that happens in that context. And then you have to kind of be in the right mind frame. And I think you even mentioned like you may need to fake it till you make it a little bit, but there is that, you know, start by starting, take that leap, and then be really present. The other thing that I thought was really powerful, and I was sort of extending it beyond the context of teaching a toddler to read, was questions, statements versus direction.
Yes.
Can you expand on that?
Yes. Questions. There's actually four. I missed one in there. There's questions, statements, suggestions, and directions. And if you can understand this one concept, it can change your parenting. As classroom teachers, it can change your teaching.
Yeah.
And what many parents think they're doing is giving kids a clear direction, and they get frustrated when the child doesn't follow it.
Yeah.
When, in fact, rarely are parents ever giving children clear directions in a way that makes sense to the kid.
Yeah.
So many parents are asking questions saying, do you want to do the learning time? The answer to that question is no.
Right.
And after the kid says no, the parent is backtracking, trying to figure out a way to get them to say yes.
Yeah.
When you ask a question and you get a no, you have to honor it because you gave the kid the choice.
Right.
So you only ask questions about things where the answer can truly be yes or no.
Right.
Red or blue, black or white.
Mm-hmm.
You have to honor your kid's answer. So questions for things that really, really matter, you need them to do it, it's off the table.
Right.
During a fire drill, you don't say, do you want to leave the house? You say, leave now. Right? So those are questions many of us do it. Statements are just singular sentences about what is going to happen.
Right.
And our kids hear statements and it's kind of like, so what?
Right.
It is learning time. That's a statement.
Right.
Okay. It's learning time. So I'm going to run away. Right.
Right.
I'm going to do something else. I don't like learning time.
Yeah.
A lot of us do statements. It's time to go. Recess is done. So what?
Right.
Some kids respond to statements, many don't. Suggestions, which I don't think I included in this video, suggestions like what you ought to do. Maybe we should think about doing some learning. Maybe we should do our letters today.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
You're suggesting, you're saying that I want this thing, but that is not important enough and we're still leaving the option to the kid.
Right.
Which none of those three things are bad objectively.
Sure.
It's just time and place.
Mm-hmm.
We can't give directions all day and expect our kids to keep following them.
For sure.
But we save directions for things that really, really, really matter. And then we give a clear direction where we tell them what's going to happen. We might start with a statement and say, it's time for learning. And then we hold up the letter and we say, say the first sound. Mm-hmm. That's a direction.
Yeah.
Tell me the first sound.
Yeah.
It's not mean. Mm-hmm. It's not harsh. It is clear.
Yeah.
A kid hears it and they say, oh, it's time to say the first sound.
Mm-hmm.
An important point with directions is we don't repeat directions. You say a direction, you give time, you give space, you have eye contact, and you wait for the direction to be followed.
Right.
If the direction is not followed, you can have a quick conversation that says, I gave you a direction, you didn't follow it, I expect you to follow them the first time. Let's try again. Say the first sound.
Right.
The kid will get it.
Mm-hmm.
But what many people do, even if they give directions, which many people don't, is they undermine them by asking the question or giving the direction again immediately.
I see.
Before the kid has a chance to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And what the kid learns is, this is a multiple direction asker.
Yep.
This is someone who, if I don't do it the first time, they're going to keep going.
Yeah. Almost becomes a game.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's leave the playground now. Leave now.
Yeah.
It's time to go.
Right.
Leave now.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid knows, I'm not going to do it. Because after their fifth time asking, they're going to come over, grab my arm, and they're going to pull me off.
Right. With the direction also came the promise of a dance party. There's an intrinsic reward in learning.
Mm-hmm.
Kids enjoy learning things, but they can only do so much of it, and they enjoy dance parties and ice cream and carrots on the other end.
Yeah.
I like that you incorporated that into the methodology as well.
Yeah. You have to use common sense with some of these things. And I know that some folks are, you know, like, kids should be intrinsically motivated to do everything. And it's we are not as adults.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we do a lot of things for rewards.
Right, right.
Like, show me the person who's working out who could do it forever with no changes to their body, with no feedback loop, with no compliments.
Yeah.
When you do hard things at the very beginning, you often need something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Some motivation to get through.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've trained yourself to do hard things, you need less and less of that extrinsic motivation and you take more and more intrinsically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not bribing kids to learn.
Right.
I'm not creating a situation where it's like, if you do this, you know, get chocolate. But it's a situation where structurally kids need routine.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can build a routine where before the learning, we're getting them in a really good headspace to learn. For some kids, that's very physical. We get energy out.
Yeah.
For other kids, it's very calm.
Mm.
It really depends on that specific kid and what they need. Let's help build the same routine before. Then after, let's have something really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Where they know every time we finish reading, this really fun thing comes next.
Yeah.
That can begin to build a more positive association with that time.
Yeah.
And help your kid to kind of persevere during that lesson. Mm-hmm. The lesson should not be long. But 3 minutes may feel challenging.
Right.
And so after these 3 minutes, we're going to have a dance party. We're going to play. We're going to go outside. That can feel really, really good.
Yeah.
And we may not have to do that forever.
Right.
We probably don't.
Right.
But at the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
that can be a helpful way to get them to start to enjoy and engage in that learning.
Yeah. And there's a lot about like belief in what I've seen from you so far, where you have to believe it. And then you're kind of conveying that belief to your child. And it's harder with kids who are having more problems.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was amazed and impressed by is that, you know, you are working with all kinds of kids. And in some way, you know, myth busting is always, you know, something to do. And it does feel like there's a lot of misperceptions, you know, reading wars, you know, there's a lot of talk about that. We haven't really got into that. I'd love to get a little bit of your perspective on what we're getting wrong when we think about reading and we think about educating young kids about this, because it does also, you know, once you start with literacy, then you begin thinking about math and other ideas out there around education. I imagine some of the methods are probably transferable elsewhere,
yep.
but specifically about reading, what's the context you're coming into and, you know, how are you making an impact?
Yeah. The angle I'm coming in with is not groundbreaking or revolutionary or unique to me. It's that children learn to read with phonics,
mm-hmm.
knowing the sounds the letters make.
Yep.
And there's basic phonics, like the S says, and there's more advanced phonics. The situations in which EA says E versus E versus A.
Yep.
We can teach our kid phonics in a simple, basic progression of a couple sounds at a time, working generally from easiest and most frequent to hardest and least frequent, and understanding that system is going to be very helpful for the reading.
Yeah.
In terms of phonemic awareness, I focus on blending specifically. For older children, blending and segmenting, mm-hmm. which is ability to both combine sounds into words and to then take those full words and break them down into their respective sounds.
Yeah.
We have research now that supports this focus on 1 to 2 skills instead of trying to teach the full spectrum of skill time.
Yeah.
So I keep it super, super simple. And I think there's one thing that's unique about my approach is the addition of psychology
mm-hmm.
and motivation.
Mm.
And it's understanding that even if we could teach 20 things at a time, you would never stick with it.
Yeah.
So there's this tension where, yes, parents can teach letter sounds and phonemic awareness at the same time.
Yeah.
And they should. But I tell them, teach letter sounds first, and I give them guidelines about when to add phonemic awareness. We teach letter sound until we have a strong and solid routine.
Yeah.
We built our confidence. Our kid enjoys the lesson. Then let's add this second part to it where we start to blend those words together.
Mm-hmm.
Once that's solid, then we can add this third part to it where we start to read some decodable books.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to front load all of it
yeah.
and say, do a 3-part lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm going to say, you need a win.
Mm-hmm.
And once you see your kid going through those letters now, they're having fun, you're having fun. All right, add in this next part.
Yeah.
And so I think what we're getting wrong in the science of reading is just because we know everything is important doesn't mean we have to give everything equal weight
right.
or do everything at the same time.
Yeah.
I think it actually takes true mastery and true skill to know all the nuance and the complexity
mm-hmm.
and then to boil it down and make it simple.
Yeah.
It's that old adage. The way to know if you truly understand something is how clearly you teach that thing.
Yeah.
And I think if we're kind of dragging on and on and on, we don't truly understand
yeah.
what's the priority.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're able to take this kind of complex thing and boil it down, I think that's showing our mastery over the material. So I try to always balance all this information that we know is important
mm-hmm.
with what is going to actually motivate someone to get started
mm-hmm.
and to stick with it
yeah.
when some days you're going to have tough lessons.
Right.
Some days the kid's going to not want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like working out, exercising as adults, some days when it's just tough for us.
Right, right.
How do we motivate ourselves to keep going?
Mm-hmm.
Is it that we tell ourselves we've got to do a 3-hour workout, an hour of cardio, an hour of this, an hour of that?
Right.
Or is it where we tell ourselves it's okay just to get in the gym
mm-hmm.
15 minutes a day
mm-hmm.
until it's routine,
yeah,
and then we can add another 10 minutes?
Our listeners aren't all in early childhood ed. They're not all focused on literacy. They may or may not be parents. But what I like about your message is I think it could be extended and there's lessons to be learned. Like a lot of folks talk about how there are problems with the rising generations. Kids are in too much control. I did like the fact that you had that direction. I think sometimes people do need to be led. And especially if those people happen to be 2 or 3 years old, even more so. And I do think sometimes we may be, with good intent, seeding too much too soon and kind of overwhelming people.
I agree.
So as we kind of move forward in the conversation, if folks are out there, they've stuck around this long, I think there's a lot to be learned here. But if you were to try to extrapolate, what are some lessons learned to maybe extend beyond your context to what this might mean for folks who care about the future of education, what are your thoughts?
First thought is you are right. I think a lot of well-intentioned parents are being misled into thinking that permissive parenting is a positive thing for children or thinking that their permissive parenting is positive parenting or gentle parenting, when in reality they are being guided influencers and other accounts who don't actually have the credibility or the experience across a broad spectrum of children to be able to give the support.
Mm-hmm.
And I will stand behind that. I'll go account by account.
Yeah.
The advice that parents are getting on how to raise their children is not okay.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the guide for whether or not you should trust someone's information is whether it's working.
Mm.
So I would recommend folks can watch the video in the show notes that I put on directions.
Yeah.
Try it for one day.
Mm-hmm.
And if your children do not fundamentally respond to you differently, if you implement this with fidelity, scrap the idea.
Yeah.
But the people who watch the video come back voluntarily to comment, try this morning,
can't
believe how well it worked.
Right.
That's the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And I put that video out after 6 years of working with some of the most challenging behaviors you can imagine.
Yeah.
Being the kid, being the guy in the class who gets the kids, who other teachers can't handle,
yeah.
who people don't want. The people will say, this kid goes or I go.
Yeah.
I know very few parents who are dealing with children that challenging. And if I can implement these strategies in a class of 28,
yeah.
those behaviors with three kids at home and your kid's behavior right now, it will work.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff works.
Yeah.
And instead, people are being given very general, broad.
Mm.
Instead of say this, say this.
Mm.
Instead of do this, do this.
Mm-hmm.
There's no substance behind it. And so the kids are struggling.
Yeah.
And if you're following accounts and following parenting information and your kid's behavior isn't changing,
mm.
it's time to try something else.
Yeah.
To answer your actual question, my journey to this stage has been something I have been manifesting for the last 3 years. This is literally, I have meditated on, dreamed of, thought of this exact moment,
mm.
and have kind of backwards planned from here to put things in place.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people don't truly believe in themselves.
Yep.
And so they have very big goals, but then the actions don't follow.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I knew someday I'm going to be in a situation that's very stressful, a lot of anxiety to be kind of backstage when your name's being called.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew it'd be a lot. And so for the last 13 months, I've been doing cold showers every morning because it really sparks the system and it gets your blood pumping and gets your heart going.
Yeah.
And then I've tried to practice speaking and staying calm and putting myself in a very stressful situation on purpose to see, okay, can I maintain my calm and my cool?
Yeah.
Been doing the same thing with meditation,
mm-hmm.
exercising. I have like a personal coach that I've hired to coach me mm-hmm. and to guide me.
Yeah.
It's everything from my sleep. I track my sleep every night to my screen time.
Yep.
My phone is black and white. So I don't want to look at it.
Yeah.
I track the minutes per day.
Yeah.
To what I drink, getting rid of alcohol.
Yeah.
To what I eat in the middle of the day when I get tired, how I structure. You know, on a personal level, right now at this stage in life, everything is kind of on a trajectory of improvement.
Yeah.
Because I know not only like the kind of stage I want to be on, I know the kind of level I want to perform.
Yeah.
And so I think what a lot of people see who know me is like, here's Spencer, like the influencer, like here's fun videos. But what people don't see is this was very serious to me.
Yeah.
When I started this business, it was either business succeeds or we lose our house.
Right.
We lose our cars. We had no savings. We had nothing. And for my wife to say, I trust you, I had to step up in a lot of ways. I think that when you go all in on something, which you're very familiar with, and you actually believe in yourself enough to prepare as if it is going to happen.
Yeah.
That when it does happen, you're ready to step into that moment and to capitalize it. And so that's how I've tackled this leading up to the very random email I got to keynote this.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a stage where I was very focused and very ready.
Yeah.
And I just hired a personal coach. So I invest financially
in
getting better. I had changed a lot of practices in my life, tried to prioritize the right things, starting to prioritize better, more focused time with my family, all those sorts of things. And so it feels amazing to see these things happen.
Mm.
But also it is thousands of hours of work.
Yeah. And you can feel it. You can feel it on the stage. You can feel it in your videos. I can certainly feel it in the small audio booth that we're in here now when we're having this conversation. And it's certainly something I think that extends into all elements of even beyond education. You're an example of someone who's able to basically make a dent in reality through your own discipline and your own practice, which is truly impressive. And there's a lot for, I think, everyone to learn from that. We're pretty much at the end of our conversation. You can go anywhere you'd like here with your closing thoughts. You know, I'm here with Spencer Russell, the founder and CEO of Toddlers Can Read. Really inspirational story and someone who really is making a difference in the lives of kids and families, all kids, all toddlers. Any concluding thoughts?
I'll give it a shot. I think especially after that last little bit where I talked about myself, I want people to know like this is just my story, but the story is not about me. It's about you, whoever's listening. And so anytime I listen to someone who's kind of like, here's what I did, blah, blah, blah. always what you can you take home to translate to your situation. And the message of my keynote was, enough of the talk. Let's just start doing the thing. And I think for most people in their life, there's something they want to do, whether it's education, whether it's personally. And all I can say is just do the thing.
Yeah.
Like there's really nothing to lose. Like, let's say I lost my house. Okay. I lost a house.
Yeah.
Like I still went for it.
Right.
You know?
And yeah.
So there's a different kind of feeling and energy in life. There's a different passion. For folks in education, I think this is especially important because there's a lot of different ways to make a difference in education. What I do for toddlers and reading, there's nothing there for math.
Right.
There's nothing there for other subjects.
Yeah, yeah.
There's all these gaps in adults. There's literacy gaps all over the board. The number of people I've met at this conference who do different things in education, like there are so many ways to make a difference and to make an impact that you don't have to just cling to what's safe.
Yeah.
This is a whole another world with social media, with our connection. You can just pick the thing you want to help with and you can go after it.
Yeah. But it takes focus and it takes work and it looks easy. I've been talking a lot about the metaphor of the swan, where the swan looks chill up top, but underneath there's paddling going on and there's a lot of like work involved in the practice. Spencer, thank you so much for joining me on today's show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And for our listeners, hopefully you enjoyed what you heard. If you did, please subscribe, tell your friends, do all the good things. This is Trending in Education.